Preparing to delve in 3, 2, 1.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Delve. My name is Nathan.
And I'm Alex.
And Alex, how many cities have you been to in your life?
Oh, too many.
Too many? Did you ever find that some of them might be, I don't know, maybe foggy or, you know, misty in some way?
Brumis?
Sure.
Yes.
Anyway, good news. We are going to be talking about a very specific city of mist. And to do so, we have the man who created a game called City of Mist, Amit Moshe. Amit, thank you for being on.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
It is. I have heard so many people talking about City of Mist over the last year or so. Did you think it would have that kind of impact? It really feels like everyone is talking about it now.
Well, I'm very happy to hear that. I was hoping we would have this kind of impact, definitely, when I created it. And, you know, the way we kind of played it, it was definitely, we were definitely aiming at creating this kind of impact. It's a very special game, obviously, personally, to me, because I created it, but I think also for the feedback that we've been getting from people. So, yeah, this was the plan all along, and I'm happy it's working out.
So. Yeah, it certainly seems like it is. Now, being the novice that I am, I'm not real familiar with like the setting. I mean, I can assume that it's set in a city and there is mist involved, but could
very astute. You could be a detective.
Yeah, don't give him any any encouragement there. Really quick question: as Nathan's about to ask you to tell us about it, yeah, does this take place on the Isle of Mist?
The Isle of Mist.
Because there's a video game series about that. So I'm just checking.
Oh my God. We had a massive mess. Before I go into City of Mist, I will say that originally we wrote Mist with a Y because it's mystery and mystical and a lot of different things. And then everyone was like, don't do that.
They're like, no. There's a whole wormhole of things and reasons why you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
To be fair, Mist was a great game, but this is not that game.
No. City of Mist is really noir. It's kind of a noir / graphic novel game. So it's comic book noir kind of game where you play ordinary people with legendary powers. So basically, people in this city wake up one day and discover that a legend is kind of incarnated in them. So we have anything. It could be Alice in Wonderland, King Arthur, ancient Egyptian gods, whatever. And these legends are appearing inside ordinary people. You know, the plumber, the detective, the executive. So you play these characters. And the whole premise is that the city is under some kind of a spell or a mystical barrier called the mist or a veil that hides the activity of legendary powers from the sleeping or sleepwalking residents, the people who have not awakened to their legend, also known as sleepers. And so you operate in this city that looks completely normal. You know, it's a modern day city. Everybody's living out their lives, where actually behind the scenes, there's a hidden underworld of crime and magic and legends where they clash to try to get their, you know, promote their agendas, whether it's their human or their legendary agenda. And there's a whole bunch of things going on there, not to mention the, you know, the powers that are kind of running the mist or maintaining the mist, the kind of evil organization that's kind of doing that. So
are they really so evil if they're shrouding activities? Aren't they just like the reverse of the NSA?
That's a good point, because nothing is really black and white in City of Mist, because it takes from noir comic book stuff. Like, you can think of Jessica Jones, you can think of maybe bits of Fables, and especially the Telltale game The Wolf Among Us, if you ever played it.
I have.
So yeah, these kind of like detective but with superpowers or with supernatural powers, and here it also gets a little bit of a mystical twist to it. So because it takes after all these examples, the morality is never, you know, black and white, clear cut kind of thing. It's all very gray. Everybody has an agenda. Everybody promotes their agenda. And also the people behind the mist are promoting a very clear agenda that's actually important for the city. But of course, on the way, they do a lot of kind of government style scary stuff. So.
Okay. Yeah. I don't like government style scary stuff. It terrifies me.
Well,
oh no.
So you will definitely not like the gatekeepers when you meet them on your next game.
Uh-oh. It's never good when they call themselves gatekeepers.
I know. It's a slippery slope from there. But yeah, so you actually play, I mean, in the basic form of the game, in the core book, you play rifts. So people who have awakened through their legendary powers and who have questions about their powers, about what's going on in the city. And often this group, your group of rifts called crew, is kind of like revolves around some kind of, there are multiple options, right? But it revolves around some kind of mutual agenda. So either you're a group of vigilantes fighting crime, or you are a group of professionals for hire, you know, guns for hire or muscle. You could be just a bunch of friends from high school or something like that, or from college, who are, you know, kind of like thrown into this world of magic and crime. So that's pretty much a premise.
So it's sort of like if I were to try and, you know, go with something that I used, you mentioned Fable, so like Wolf Among Us, that kind of thing. But if I were to take kind of that, but instead of like fairy tale characters, and take more historical characters and kind of put that onto it, transpose it, I'd be somewhat there to the setting.
Well, no, it doesn't have to be historical settings. It could be anything. It could be myths, legends, fairy tales, folk tales, more modern stories. We have character based on Moby Dick and Don Quixote and all these all these characters. So it's really like stories coming to life in a modern city.
Oh, very nice.
Through ordinary people.
These legendary powers. What causes these to appear?
So this is a mystery and it's kind of left open for every group to kind of figure it out in your game. We're going to be touching on that in some of the expansions we're planning. But generally, your character has a mythos, which is that legend that is going kind of like entering reality through you. You're the gateway. You're a rift in the mist. You're basically the tear in the mist through which that mythos is coming into existence. And this mythos wants to tell its story, and it's doing it through you. So it kind of pushes you in that direction. All mythoi do that. So you get a city full of different legends trying to tell their story and kind of connecting with other legends. And of course, some of the people are more awakened, some of them are less awakened. So the more you let the legendary kind of grow in you, the more you become an instrument in its path or journey to tell its story. And the game mechanics also support a lot of that conflict of ordinary versus legendary. This balance constantly shifts in your character. You actually lose some aspects of you when you become more legendary. You lose ordinary aspects when you become more legendary. And you lose legendary aspects when you return to the ordinary. And you can actually go overboard in each direction. You can become a sleeper again, and you can also become an avatar, who's someone who completely yielded to the legendary, you know, aspect in them. So there's a lot of that kind of, you know, flexibility and very much like character-centric storytelling aspect to it that is also backed by the mechanics.
So here's the real question. Why would anyone want to be ordinary?
There's a couple of things. First of all, it's a threat, and it's something that could, you know, if you don't want to become ordinary, then you will do a lot of things so that it doesn't happen to you in the game. Secondly, it's a really nice, it's actually the ordinary really balances the legendary in that it gives more texture to your character. So it's your life. It's your, I don't know if your character has a family or children or a loved one or a job or a mission. And are you really willing to sacrifice all these things to become more legendary? Mm. And so I think the ordinary aspect really gives all the you know, all the texture to this setting. So sometimes I've seen players that want to say, yeah, my character's, she's done with this legendary stuff. You know how superheroes do that sometimes? They're like, I don't want this anymore. I'm letting everything go. And so you can play that in the game, and there are rules for that and rules for how your friends can kind of bring you back from that as well. So this is all very much inspired by comic books and graphic novels.
I mean, right. It makes me think of Kratos because he became legendary and gave up his family. Well, he killed his family to attain all that and then tried to give it up. And they're like, no. So he tried to kill himself.
There you go.
maybe not quite the parallel you're looking for, but, you know.
No, it's definitely, that is definitely that dramatic thing, that kind of dramatic developments. The system is really built around, other than all the, you know, the combat and all that kind of stuff and the investigation, the system is really built around creating possibilities for dramatic developments in the characters' lives. So you gain themes, you lose themes, your character is changing, you sacrifice some of your powers, or you make a sacrifice in order to attain a certain goal. Like whenever you use, we have a move called Stop Holding Back. So you're able to use your powers at a really crazy level, but you make very big sacrifices to do that. So it's all about really creating a story, because I feel that this is becoming more and more something people are looking for, you know, systems that are supporting interesting story development and kind of make them happen, rather than a system that just like tells me what I'm able to do, but it doesn't promote the story, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
I get you. And I kind of like the idea that, you know, you do have something to lose, that there's like a give and take. So like I could be me, but then if like I'm also Don Quixote, you know, I have to give up my like video game time so that I can go and chase windmills. I might not like that bargain.
Exactly.
I gotta rectify this in my head. That would actually not be a great character to end up being. Don Quixote would not be a great character to end up embodying.
You could be the legendary legendary Leroy Jenkins, if you prefer anything.
That would be more useful, I can tell you that. So City of Mist is a noir, but it is still set in the modern day.
Definitely, yeah. It's kind of, I guess, technically it's a neo-noir. It's noir with color.
So a neon noir?
Ooh. It's also neon and noir. I said neo, but it's also very neon noir. Certainly our Kickstarter now and our story arc book, Knights of Paintown, is very neon noir.
So it's a neo-neon noir.
Exactly.
Triple N. Get that alliteration down.
Exactly.
Always.
So it's a detective story with superpowers, basically.
I really like the idea of that whole setting. Let's head back for a little bit. Let's go to the Wayback Machine for a second, and talk sure. about the actual point where you really started working on the game. What was your inspiration to create this kind of setting in the first place?
Well, this setting existed for a while, and then I created the game for it. But the setting existed for a while. Yeah, I guess. The point that really. That really inspired me to create it was a really specific moment in time. I was actually in Jerusalem at the time, and it's a city that very much mixes the old and the new. You can walk in a city block and suddenly have a mausoleum from, I don't know, 2,000 years ago, and you can see where it's going. So I was walking there at night, and I hear, you know, sirens and things that are very, dogs barking, very much a city thing. But I'm standing next to this mausoleum, and it's really old, and there's definitely that mix of myth and modernity, I guess. And that was where I kind of started thinking, that'd be interesting. I mean, I would really love to create something that's kind of playing on that mystery, and where there is really a world hidden within our own world. So that was kind of the origin of where it started.
And how long ago was that?
This was in 2005, so we've played this for like 10 years before we start. I mean, in different campaigns and not consecutive 10 years. But I played in this setting for a while before I decided to turn it into a game.
Oh, I get you. it's interesting to see like the old next to the new. I feel like it would be a little jarring if I was like next to the Arc de Triomphe and there was a Starbucks next to it and you're just going back between the
there
two.
There you go.
Yeah, there probably is one next to it, but you know.
Sure.
We'll slide past that.
There's a Starbucks next to everything.
There's one in the arch.
Sure. That would actually be really interesting if you could get your coffee at the top of the arch. That's a very neon noir thing too.
Totally.
When you originally started working on City of Mist as a game,
yeah,
what did you want to use for mechanics to really drive that story, really drive that mechanically?
So I definitely am a big fan of Powered by the Apocalypse, like Dungeon World and Apocalypse World and a bunch of other games. I think it's great for driving the story, propelling it forward, and especially because I don't know if you know the system, but it's basically rolling 2d6 and adding a modifier, and you always look at the results, you know, you judge them by the same categories. Six or less is a miss, but a miss isn't just a miss. It always means that the MC or the GM gets to introduce a new complication, a severe complication. Then 7 to 9 is a mix of like it's a weak success. It's usually some good things mixed with some complications, and 10 or more is a great success. And the different moves, what's beautiful about Apocalypse World is that the moves are built to create a certain genre, to push the story in a certain direction. So you would have in Dungeon World, you have, you know, basically Dungeon World is the D&D version of Apocalypse World. So you would have moves that are similar to D&D, right? And in other games, you have moves that they're basically capture the tropes or the essence of the actions of the genre. So in City of Mist, you have investigate, you have hit with all you've got. That's basically your way to punch the living daylights out of someone. You have stop holding back. You have all kinds of moves that are built to create the story. So I really loved Apocalypse World, and I was going to use it. The only problem with that is that superheroes in Apocalypse World don't really go very well because Apocalypse is very structured. You have a finite number of moves, and you can't really create, you know, a lot of variety in the superpowers. So this is where we added tags, or I added tags. So basically, instead of adding a modifier like a stat to your rolls, you actually have 12 tags when you start the game. Whenever you take an action, you pick out the tags that are most relevant for that action. And that is the number of tags that you can associate with the action is your modifier. So this kind of opened up a whole new world because tags can be anything, you know, they can be obviously characteristics, powers, abilities, gear, allies, resources, attitudes, personality traits. There's a really no limit to what tags can be. So that makes, like, people have tags like obviously strong and I don't know, like if you're Don Quixote, you have maybe like a lance and things like that, or a phantasmal
yes.
lance that you can summon. But sometimes people also have things like witty remarks, or, you know, lines like the more the merrier, and then your character is stronger when there's a bunch of people.
Just gives me a little bit of vibes towards the Fate system.
Yeah, definitely. Reminded a lot of people of Fate. I played the setting using Fate, and that was one of the options. And I have to say that I don't understand Fate very well. I have never really studied it. But the only thing that I felt when I played it, it was a little bit like up in the air. You know, it wasn't crunchy enough. So I wanted to find a balance between going completely hand-wavy and, you know, going full on a crunchy system to something that was relatively rules light, but kind of felt meaty enough. I don't know if you ever played Fate. Did you have that feeling?
I haven't played Fate. I did make a character for a game that never happened. And I've listened to some Fate games played. But yeah, it is very open, and it does seem like it's a lot less rules structured. Whereas, suppose you said Apocalypse World is very structured.
Yeah.
So I think that middle ground is really an interesting place between the crunchiness and the role-playingness. Then I think that's actually a really good ground to occupy for a noir.
That was definitely what we were going for there.
Now, when you said tags, do I have actual tags like I can hold and I can put on my shirt or something like that? I want to actually put tags on that.
So, yeah, the City of Mist character sheet is actually made out of 4 cards. Each one of your cards is a theme, and you start with 3 power tags. There are also weakness tags that take away from your rolls, like it's a negative modifier. So, yeah, of course, you can also print out a sheet that has the cards printed on it, but we actually have some really cool accessories for that. We also have kind of like tag or status cards, because during the game, there could be additional kind of tags flying around, like the MC can say, or the GM can say during the game, okay, you've just entered this fire, you know, exchanging shots with crooks in the alley, and it's very rainy. Here's a tag, rainy. And now if you know, if that tag helps you, it's going to boost your rolls. You know, if it hurts your actions, it's going to reduce your roll, and so on and so forth. So we also have cards for that, you know, as you kind of like tags are flying around the table.
Very nice. Yeah, I guess I should have asked more about like the layout of the game itself. Like when I'm playing, you know, what kind of things do I have in front of you? You mentioned that there are cards. So do I, am I going to hold some cards, or am I just going to let it all out on the table for people to see?
Yeah, you can. It's definitely not a game where you want to be hiding anything. Your cards are really just your character sheet. Yeah, that's, you can definitely keep them close to your chest, but it wouldn't necessarily do anything. And we also have in the starter set, we have these folios for the pre-generated characters, and they each have their 4 card printed on this nice folio with some really cool art. You kind of look at and, you know, summary of the rules, stuff like that, that just helps people get into the game.
Yeah, the only thing I don't want people to know is that I am Don Quixote. I think that I might want to try and hide that as much as possible.
You would just be attacked with all sorts of windmills.
Exactly.
If you can weaponize a windmill, that's a pretty good power, actually. Mm-hmm.
It's a windmill full of corpses, Nathan.
Oh, it's an undead windmill?
No, it's just
undead windmill.
It's full of corpses. I think that's a
zombie
card.
Windmill, no.
I think it's a card in Cards Against Humanity, just a windmill full of corpses.
That does sound like something that they would have put in that game.
Yeah. Actually, the core book character is the core book kind of sample character is he's a reporter for the City Herald, based on Don Quixote. So he's this kind of a moody guy, romantic, obviously. And he has some really cool tags, but one of his weakness tags that I really love is Reality Hurts. So he's actually, his defensive power is to summon this kind of like an armor that he dreams about, like a phantasmal or dream armor. And that's pretty effective against creatures of legend. But when you're shot with, when he specifically is shot with a gun or just beat up like the old fashioned way, so it's not as effective because, you know, it's, you know, if you don't know the story, Don Quixote is dreaming all of this. It's not real. And reality always kicks him in the butt. So that's kind of a feature of this character.
When we go back to the start, like before it was really a game and you playing it and testing that out.
Yeah.
What kind of characters were you playing?
When this was in playtesting, you mean, when we just started out?
Yeah. When you were just starting out, like what were you playing? What were your favorite characters to play?
Actually, they ended up being in our starter set. So we had a set of characters that we used in our playtest that later became the starter set for City of Mist. And that's, by the way, that's free. Anyone can download that on our website. So my favorite character was Declan Lestrange, or he had a different name in his original version, but he's this kind of almost like a dream god, kind of Morpheus sort of character. So he's able to dream new things into existence. He's in real life, or in, you know, in his ordinary life, he's a smuggler. He's this kind of a gunslinging art smuggler, or antique smuggler. So that was one of the characters I really liked. Another character that people really loved playing was Flicker. She had more like time and space bending powers. Two of her themes is like hipster and hacker. So she's basically, people loved acting out the, you know, the little remarks and the way she talks, right. The way she dresses. So that was another favorite character.
Like a hackster. Is that how it's
hackster, exactly. Hackster? Total hackster. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm way too cool for the internet.
Yeah, I'm way too cool for anything that's happening in the game. And people just love taking that position and annoying the hell out of the rest of the players, but it's fun.
Seems legit. It's the cool thing to do.
Exactly.
It's so 2015.
Totally. Internet.
I like the Morpheus character. Do I get a choice between pills? Do I have to choose between a blue pill?
Yeah, exactly.
Are we living in their reality?
Exactly.
Actually, speaking of Nathan asking about choices, are there different types of character options or races or archetypes or classes or anything like that in City of Mist?
So City of Mist, in every character is built out of four themes that can be either legendary, called the Mythos themes, or ordinary, called Logos themes. And you choose when you start the game how many are legendary and how many are ordinary. So you can have 3 and 1, 2 and 2, or 1 and 3. And there are 7 types of themes in each of those sides, on each of those sides. So you can basically choose what to highlight in your character. So for the Mythos legendary powers, we have Bastion, which is defensive, mobility, like all kinds of movement powers, and so on and so forth. And on the Logos side, your ordinary life, you can choose to highlight a mission that you have, training that you've had, defining event in your life, defining relationship, gear that you have. And when you choose those themes, first of all, you have a theme book, which is like a questionnaire that helps you create your tags for that theme. And secondly, you're kind of defining what your character is about. So it's not exactly classes, but you basically, when you create a character, you pick out 4 of those theme types to kind of fine tunes what your character is about.
So when we get into the aspects that you have in your ordinary form and then in your supernatural form, when you were talking about kind of moving from one to the other, do I have to start taking some of those away in and gaining other ones in more the supernatural form? Is that kind of the aspect?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. So you basically, your themes are, they each have either a mystery that you have to investigate or an identity that you have to uphold. So let's say that you have a theme that you're one of the characters, Salamander, also a favorite of mine. He's a plumber who has the mythos of the salamander, kind of like creature of fire, but also very connected to rain and water. So he has this, primordial lizard creature inside of him. And he has this routine. It's called a routine theme called, just to represent his job and the things he can do because of his job as a plumber. And his identity on that theme is, I need my job to survive. So whenever a character does something to put her job in danger or something that goes against the statement, that theme starts cracking. And after a couple of times it cracks, you lose it. You basically did not, you didn't do enough to save your job. You get fired or whatever. The story is kind of built around it. And you get a legendary theme, a new theme, the character, it's like think comic books. The character got fired, but that kind of makes more space in her life or his life for new powers to emerge, or the trauma of it, makes new powers emerge. So you're always playing on that balance between legendary and ordinary.
I was actually going to ask, when you lose a theme and you gain a new one, how do you go about gaining a new one?
Well, first of all, you pick out a new theme book or a new theme type for whatever it is you gain. And at the beginning, the theme is called a nascent theme. So you only have 1 tag in the theme, but nascent themes kind of evolve faster. So you don't spend a lot of time being depowered, but it kind of lets you, you don't have to whip it all out, all the details out and create all the tags on the spot just after your character had a major event. You can kind of do it gradually. You don't have to do it in the middle of the game. So you describe basically how these new powers appear, Or if you lost a legendary theme and you're gaining an ordinary one, you start describing how this new ordinary aspect in your life begins taking place. So maybe the character, I don't know, learns to be a lawyer and they take a tag like that, or they start training in martial arts because of what happened. I don't know, let's say they lost their power in a fight with the super demigod, whatever, and now they still want to be relevant, so they take up martial arts classes. There's a lot of it in the core book about how to introduce those new new themes. Even if you replace a theme like that, you actually get special points called evolution points for everything that you accumulated in the theme you lost. So you actually get to unlock greater things by losing themes. It was really important to create some kind of a mechanism that would encourage players to take those dramatic actions and get to those dramatic developments.
Cool. So can I ever gain the same theme I had once back, for instance?
Yeah, if you want to do that, you can definitely, you can. There's no limitation on that. There is this, I guess, a place in the core book where we say, ask yourself if that's the most interesting thing you can do with this moment, but sometimes it is, so there's no limitation.
Right. I foresee someone that's built like the Hulk and then loses their, you know, super strength, angriness power, whatever you want, their Hulk power.
Yeah.
And then they're like, man, I can't do anything I used to be able to do. I want to get that back. So they're actively trying to get it back or something like that.
Yeah. There's one thing that's really important to note is that this whole losing and gaining themes thing is completely in the hands of the player. It's not something that the MC chooses. The player chooses when to say, oh my God, I just, you know, completely ignored the fact that I'm working tomorrow morning. I'm going to mark crack. That's one of the progression bars of the deterioration of the theme. I'm going to mark crack on my character because my character is actually, she just did something against my core, you know, identity. Or let's say that my mythos is calling me to explore something, a question like when is it the right thing to use violence or something like that. And I ignore that question and I don't look into that. And so maybe I'm kind of letting go of my mythos because that's the whole thing about my mythos. So players really are in control. It's just a tool for the players to get more out of the characters. It was a big decision in game design because usually the GM is responsible for compelling the players into these things, but it's just not that much fun when you're being forced into these things. So we kind of said, why shouldn't the players just manage their own dramatic moments? And it's totally okay if one of the players doesn't want that. I mean, they just want to stay with their power set and build them up. That's fine. That's an option.
Cool. No, I can totally get behind that. That it sounds really interesting. It sounds like it flows fairly easily from one thing to the next.
Yeah, that's at least what people report. That's obviously my experience when I play with it. But yeah, I think that's one of the strengths of the game. It's just really like a very flowing game. You don't stop a lot for any kinds of calculations and stuff like that. The moves drive the story forward, adding more complications and twists and turns. Yeah, that was definitely the purpose or the thought behind building it.
I have heard you mention the term MC. I don't think I'm really just very familiar with that term. What does that mean?
Yeah, that's just the game master for Apocalypse World. Master of Ceremonies.
Master of Ceremonies. Okay. So like MC Hammer or any of those MC.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Not Escher, but, you know, the other ones. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's okay. Basically the role of the GM. It's very much to drive things, but it's a little more host kind of thing. You know, there's a lot of the narrative or the agency or the narrative power is in the hands of the players. So I think that's why they chose that name.
Is it the kind of thing that you prefer to use when you're talking about City of Mist? Or do you have a preference of what people call the person running the game?
Oh, no, totally not. But we definitely had to choose one for the book when we're writing texts. And I felt that was, you know, that was a good term. You know, it's not the game master. No one's mastering the game. Definitely, we definitely right in the most explicit way that it's the most important role in the game, because without the MC or the game master, you can't really play. But it's just something we had to choose from a technical perspective, right, how to call this. So
right. And it kind of lends to the to its origins with like the Powered by the Apocalypse sort of
exactly
narrative. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Me personally, I like to stick with CM. Somebody's going to get that reference, but only somebody who follows like things I do personally. Doesn't matter. We were very happy to have Amit Moshe on the program and talk more about City of Mist, which, you know, I'm not personally familiar with, but my goodness, so many people keep talking to me about it. So being able to learn all about the game was a real treat. When we return on the next episode, we are going to be talking more about the current Kickstarter that he has going on for Knights of Paintown, which is actually a story arc book for City of Mist. But do not wait until then. You can go right over to Kickstarter and look up City of Mist. You will find it. They've done a whole thing with that where you can get PDFs or hardcover copies of books. They have four different books, Knights of Paintown, Shadows and Showdowns, which is an expansion book, The Player Guide, and the MC Toolkit. And you can basically pick and choose how many of the books you would like. And if you would like some in PDF form or some in hardcover form, but the artwork is really great. You should go and check it out and see if this is right for you. Or if you want to check out some resource materials about City of Mist, go over to cityofmist.co. And over there, they actually have a few free downloads so that you can kind of see the system, a few free cases that are downloadable. You can go and check those out, and then you can get a real feel for it yourself. So something else you can do that doesn't take any investment on the outset for you to look into. And also make sure to follow them on Twitter at City of Mist RPG. I would be remiss if I didn't mention delvecast.com, where we do a landing page basically for every single project that we work on. There's a whole bunch of things over there. In addition to the entire Delve library, you can also find episodes of Orbital, and you can find my continuing free-to-play marathon on Attempting to Play. We're doing two videos a week for like the next 2 months, it feels like, and probably maybe more than that. I don't really know at this point. So you can find it all over on delvecast.com. Also, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to us on any podcast app that you happen to utilize, if you use any of them. And also make sure to check us out on Twitter. I am at Citanium, Alex is at EXP Limited, and the show is at Delve Podcast. And also, if you happen to be on DelveCast.com, check out our Patreon. We have redone it. It's not the funny, tongue-in-cheek one I had up originally. It's actually with like real tiers that have actual stuff attached to them now. And on that note, I would like to thank our shiny level sponsors, Bonnie Ainsworth and Dom Perry. Thank you so much for supporting the show. And also, while we are going to be having another episode where we talk more about Knights of Paintown with Amit Moshe, we are going to be airing that after something cool happens, and I want to mention it to you if you are interested. If you like watching live plays and live streams, on August 13th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on twitch.tv/encounterroleplay, they are going to be doing this like exclusive playthrough of one of the scenarios from Knights of Paintown. So you can get to see some really, really good role players play this game. You don't want to miss that, because you know Encounter Roleplay does some really great stuff, right? Of course you do. So check that out, because that's going to be airing before we actually do the next episode. Now, even after that time, though, you could just go on and watch it anyway. But if you want to watch it live, August 13th, 8 p.m. Eastern. And with that said, I think I'm going to go try and get out of this mist. It's a heavy fog. Feels more like a heavy fog. Anyway, until next time, thank you for joining us. And we're looking forward to seeing you next time when we delve even deeper into City of Mist. Goodbye. We usually split them up because we talk so long to people, and we like to do like 30 to 40 minutes, like for an episode.
I love that. I think it's great. You delve, basically.
We do.
Yeah, we delve.
The name goes.
Yeah.
Somebody got the joke. This man's hired.
The what? The
joke. It's the entire premise of the name.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, we're going to call it Delve. And he's like, why? I'm like, because we delve into all these topics, Nathan.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. I can get behind it.